Welcome back to special coverage of President Obama's second inauguration. And joining me now to talk about the atmosphere on the Mall during the president's second inauguration and a look at how the beginning of president's second term is shaping up is Todd Purnham. He's national editor for Vanity Fair. Very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Todd, where are you right now?
Right.
Where are you? Well, I guess you're lost in the ether. Okay, we're going to try to, as I understand it, Todd Purnham is in a van on his way to Blair House with a lot of other members of the press corps, and I thought he might be able to give us some sense of what that was all about. We are reconnecting with him, and we hope to have him back in just a moment, because we also Todd, are you there?
Yes, hi, Leonard.
Hi, so can you tell us what you're doing right now?
I'm riding in a bus down Pennsylvania Avenue, which is completely sealed off, except I happen to have hitched a ride with some friends on a bus full of the Diplomatic Corps, which is now headed to Blair House to watch the parade. So we are riding down a completely empty Pennsylvania Avenue with thousands of people lining the street.
So you were able to pull off something that many others will envy you for the rest of your life.
Well, it's location, location, as we know in New York. Some friends and neighbors, I went into them, they took pity on me. But it was a wonderful day here today. The skies are sort of battleship gray, much warmer than it was 4 years ago. It's impossible not to be stirred by the ceremony. As Senator Schumer and Senator Lamar Alexander both said, the co-chairs of the Special Joint Inaugural Committee, it's really one of those wonderful times that we reminded how our country works and that we vote for the person and then we transfer power peacefully. And it never hurts to be reminded of that.
Despite the bad weather, in 2009, there were nearly 2 million people on the Mall. I'm assuming a lot less this time because it's the second term.
It looked from where I was. I was literally in the front row at the inaugural platform just below the president's lectern in front of the Marine Band. And as I looked back west on the Mall, the crowd seemed to be packed all the way back to the Washington Monument. I couldn't tell beyond that. Of course, 4 years ago, they were all the way back to the Lincoln Memorial. My sense is the crowds are smaller this time, but they're not as small as I thought they would be. It's still pretty darn crowded, and a lot of enthusiasm out there.
And the crowd control is a lot better this time than the last time, I guess.
Yes, I think they didn't have any of these mishaps like they had last time with people getting stuck in a tunnel and so forth and so on. They school and whatever the mistakes were last time, and the public transportation seems to be working well today, and I actually drove to the Capitol and parked at Union Station, which is something that's very hard to do on a normal weekday, so I was stunned at how people had taken to heart the notion of, you know, taking public transportation.
So what did you think of the speech? Will it be one that will be remembered? Was there a line that stood out to you? Hello? I think we might have lost. He probably went through is going through a tunnel right now or something. Okay, well, we have, while we reconnect with Todd, we asked people on Facebook what their favorite lines from the speech were, and Janet said, "A great nation cares for the vulnerable." Deborah said, "Seneca Falls to Selma to Stonewall." In fact, that got 3 votes. Irina said, "We cannot mistake absolutism for principle or substitute spectacle for politics or treat name-calling as reasoned debate." Todd, a different Todd, not Todd Purnham, says, "Our journey is not complete until our gay brothers and sisters are treated like anyone else under the law. For if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well." And Laura said, "We, the people, declare today that the most evident of truths that all of us are created equal is the star that guides us still." Hi, Todd, you back?
Yes, I'm sorry. There's just the cell circuits are so overloaded today. And the phone companies have all said how are they going to lay on extra towers and everything to try to avoid that problem. But it's just a little bit inevitable, I think.
Well, I was asking what your favorite line, if there was a favorite line. And did you think that this was a really effective speech?
I thought it had a number of wonderful lines, and yes, I did think it was effective on the whole. I was struck by the line from Seneca Falls to Selma to Stonewall, which was a wonderful way of talking about the steady progress of human rights in American history without making it sound like an alphabet soup, as so often can be the case. It was a poetic way of saying women, blacks, and gays. And then, of course, it was striking to hear him refer to our gay brothers and sisters, which is a very unusual thing for a president to say still in 2013. And as I looked out over the crowd and the mall and looked at the platform and the singers and the speakers, it was impossible not to be struck by the changing face of America, which is really sort of changing in front of your eyes. And I couldn't help imagining what the platform would have looked like if Mitt Romney were being inaugurated today on Martin Luther King Day. And it would have certainly looked very different.
I'm talking with Todd Purdom, who's national editor for Vanity Fair. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The president addressed gun control, although not very specifically. Last week, he unveiled his proposed gun control legislation, along with the executive orders that he signed. Has that become the most urgent priority as he begins his second term? Because he did say that last month's shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, was the hardest day of his presidency.
Yes, I think it'll be fascinating to see how hard he actually works. He's committed himself, rhetorically now, to working very hard indeed, so he almost has to make that something of a priority. I don't think that will be the top priority in either House of Congress. Of course, the thing that's facing him right away, again, is this question of debt ceiling, resolving what's supposed to happen with these automatic cuts that would kick in as a result of the last failed attempt to reach a big budget deal. So he's got fiscal things in the forefront. But he certainly recommitted himself today in the speech as a general principle to fighting for a renewed effort on guns.
Well, do you think that if the Newtown shooting hadn't happened, that would be one of the president's first priorities of his domestic agenda?
No, I think the new Newtown changed everything in that regard. Without Newtown, I don't think he would have had a mention of it in his inaugural address any more than he did, 4 years ago. And he also was quite specific in talking about how we're not going to punish the people who built the country, meaning senior citizens on Social Security and Medicare. And he was quite explicit in saying he was going to fight to preserve those programs.
So that was a little jab at Paul Ryan and some others in Congress?
Yes, definitely about how those people who in the Republican Party who argue that these programs sap initiative and weaken resolve and so forth. He made it clear that a lot of people in America are one bad break away from homelessness or lack of health insurance or some other really severe problem.
Now, Gallup announced earlier this month that Congress's average approval rating for last year was 15%, the lowest in the 38 years that they've been asking that polling question. The president's approval rating last year was about 48%. Does that give him some bargaining power as he negotiates with Congress?
It definitely gives him some bargaining power. I mean, as Senator McCain used to say about those poor congressional ratings, when you get down to that level, you're down to paid staff and blood relatives supporting you. But the problem for the president is that in the House Republican districts, where these Tea Party members especially won and don't face any competition from a potential Democratic opponent, they face the threat of some primary from the right, there's almost no incentive for these House Republicans to do anything to work with the president or even to work with their own leader, John Boehner. So I'm a little bit puzzled as to what he can do. There's a lot of discussion now he's going to use his campaign organization and convert it to a nationwide, bully pulpit campaign to move the needle on gun control, move the needle on these other issues. But the challenge for him is that these members, individual members, are almost indemnified against that pressure because of the nature of their districts. They've been so gerrymandered and drawn to make them safe Republican seats, just as the Democrats have made their seats safe too. But I think it's hard to see where the lever comes from that can really make change happen there.
Well, we haven't seen this much brinksmanship since John Foster Dulles in all the rounds of negotiations to raise the debt ceiling. Last week, the president said that he wanted to separate discussions about spending cuts from conversations about the debt ceiling, and House Speaker John Boehner took issue with that. Is separating the two debates the only way to get the debt ceiling raised?
Well, I think in some ways the Republicans themselves acknowledged that they would raise the debt ceiling for a short-term extension, precisely because they're worried about how they could ever get it all negotiated together as one big package. The real problem is there's no reward for being reasonable. There's no reward for being being a compromiser, there's punishment in both parties in some ways. So it'll be fascinating to see how much the president is willing to ask his own Democratic caucus in Congress to do in terms of entitlement reform or tax reform that might help them get some Republican votes. It's just it's kind of a grim situation, but he certainly did not like act today as if he were going to withdraw from the fray.
Well, is there a lot of pressure to get much of the legislative agenda passed by the middle of next year as the president
moves toward being
a lame duck?
Yes, because by the middle of next year, people will start talking about the 2014 midterm congressional elections. They'll already be talking about who the presidential contenders are for 2016. People will be worrying about, the next political round of battles and jockeying for advantage. So I think there's a lot of incentive to get something, the big things that they can get done, whether that's immigration reform, entitlement reform, the budget, guns, whatever they can do on guns or gun regulation or mental health and gun purchases and so forth. There's a lot of incentive to get that done in the next 16 months or so.
Todd Purdom is a national editor for Vanity Fair. Thank you so much for talking with us again.
Thanks, and sorry about the dropped signal, but have a good day there.
Not your fault. We forgive you.
Okay.